Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We've been playing games.
Let's do a board game one.
Board game one, yay.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to try and fit two in this show. So,
yep.
So first of all, we've got Lords of War, which is a two-player head-to-head card game of sorts.
Can I start off by saying I'm a massive fan of the form factor of this game?
Yeah, I'm holding it right here. It's basically literally the size of two decks of cards.
Yes, yeah, and everything you want is in there, including
in the
playmat, which you don't actually need.
Two players plus. I think there's some advanced rules for 3 to 6 players you can download from their website. We went with the two-player stuff,
yeah,
whatever's
the
in the
general
box.
General rule for the show, what's in the box
yep.
counts.
It says age group 12 plus.
I don't know why it couldn't be less, but...
If your kid can get hold of the idea of the spatial awareness of it all. So let's see, it's by Black Box Games,
yep.
And apparently has won the UK Games Expo Awards 2013 Best Strategic Card Game. Little sticker on the front, hastily added afterwards.
I suspect there aren't that many strategic card games, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, okay. Right, so you've got two decks of cards. This one's Lords of War, Orcs versus Dwarves, with the implication being that there'll be other boosters and whatnot with other traditional fantasy races. And can I say right off the bat, I'm bored of Orcs and I'm bored of Dwarves. I'm just fed up with seeing the standard fantasy D&D races turning up everywhere we go with this kind of fantasy backstory. Let's have something a bit more innovative, a bit more imaginative.
It doesn't have to be
ant
Tolkien.
People. Ant people are cool.
We're going to see a lot of ant people soon, I reckon.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Anyway, right, so you get two decks of cards. One deck is orcs and one deck is dwarves. You go head to head. There's a little fold-out play mat there, which is basically spaces for cards placed on the table, and it's about 6x7 rows.
Yep.
And essentially what follows is a kind of chess. Each card has attack values and certain directional arrows around the outside. Not all cards can attack in all directions, and not all cards attack for the same amount in each direction as well. So each of the different sorts of cards in there, I don't know if you want to open it up and pick a few examples, they each have different strategic options available to them. They can each attack in different directions. They each have different amounts of power when they attack in that direction. Some of them can't attack at all in certain directions.
Yes, and different cards of the same type may have different attack directions.
Mm-hmm. Each card has a defense value as well. That's its armor, its hit points, whatever. And you take turns to place them on the playmat, and you have to place them in a way, such a way that the card will engage another card, in other words, adjacent to and through one of the arrows. So basically you take turns to attack each other's cards. So the basic setup is you place one card on each of the start spaces, and then you draw, I think you draw five cards. You draw five cards off your deck to make your hand. You pick out
the general
card. There's the general of your army. He's a card in there as well. You find that one and pick him out, and he's in your hand from the word go. You put that one in as well. So those six cards are your available cards. You place one on the one space if you're player one. The next player places on the number two space, sort of preset starting positions. And then you take turns to put cards down.
Yeah.
The card's arrow must point at an enemy when you place it down, one of the arrows, and the number in the arrow must... If the number in the arrow is bigger than the defence value of the card the arrow is pointing at, you have killed that card.
Yeah. For example, I've got a Orc Deathbringer here, which attacks forwards for 5. The two forward diagonals are 3, and it has a defence value of 2. So if it ever gets 3 or more pointed at it, it will die.
Mm-hmm. The attacking is reciprocal as well. So basically, when you put your arrow card down to attack an enemy card, your arrow does that much damage, and if it's more than their defence, it kills it. But if the enemy card has an arrow pointing back at you, then that number is applied to your own defence, and your card can be killed almost instantaneously when you place it down. They will kill each other if both numbers are high enough. If any survivors of those combats stay on the table, and you draw another card to replace your hand back up to 6, and then it's your opponent's go.
Or you can pull an unengaged card off the board.
Yes, that was one of the other things you can do. So you can replenish your deck from cards that aren't in combat if they've served their purpose.
So you can send in a strong hitter, pull him back to your hand, and send him somewhere else on the board.
Mm-hmm. So already I'm liking the straightforward, simple rules. Very straightforward turn sequence. You just take turns. Where the complexity and the difficulty of it all comes in is working out where to place your card and what consequences that has once the card's down. There are ranged support cards as well. Cards like ballistas and catapults and so on. which have this little ranged attack grid, and they basically apply X number of points in a pattern ahead or behind or to the side of the card, as defined as by the little picture on the card. So multiple arrows pointing at the same space are all added up together to create an attack value for a card against that's been going to be put in that space as well. So if you put a card down in front of two cards and one's got a forward and one's got a diagonal and they both point at the card you've placed it, you get the cumulative added up attack values applied to your defence card. That starts to make the game increasingly tricky as you place more and more cards down, as all of the available spaces start to accrue quite a lot of overlapping incoming attack points. And so you start to find yourself having trouble placing more and more cards down. You must place a card every turn.
Yep.
And the winner is the person who kills 20 of the enemy cards or 4 of the enemy's command cards. Certain other cards have got, like, heroes or whatever. They have different symbols on. They're worth a lot more points. If you can kill 4 of those off, and the general is included in those command card tally, then you also win that way as well. So, what do we think? We had a go?
Well, okay, our first game, you picked Orcs.
I picked Orcs because Orcs are awesome.
Yes, and I instantly knew that I had the better deck then.
Yes.
You have this knack of finding a slightly weaker deck.
I'm always good for the underdog, yes.
And that's the biggest problem we found in that first game. I managed to turtle up using the dwarves so effectively that there was nothing you could do.
So as we were playing through the first game, we were sort of looking at the cards and looking at the values and stats and so on, and what it immediately became quite obviously apparent was that the dwarf deck is all about overlapping fields of fire. It's about defence, it's about turtling. All of the orcs' defence values are like, all of the dwarves' defence values rather are threes through to fives, mostly fours and fives, and all of the orcs' attack values generally didn't seem to have quite as much of that. They tended to be twos, mostly ones and twos, and the same in defence. So already I'm starting to see the sort of stereotypical, it's whenever you pull the tired old fantasy races trope out of the cupboard to put into a game design, you start subconsciously assigning them, you know, attributes, quirks, specialities, and dwarves are always good at defence. They're stocky, they're basically made of stone, whatever. And so typically the dwarves don't tend to get the fragile speedster stats or the horde deck type stats. They tend to get the individually very powerful and expensive but quite difficult to kill type stats. The tanks, I suppose, of the fantasy race milieu. And that seemed to be quite accurately reflected in here as well.
Yes.
Pretty much all of your cards were very hard to kill. And you had you seemed to have, and I don't know whether this is, I think I had a crap shuffle on the first go, because, you know, straight out of the cellophane, as it were. But you seemed to be able to place a huge amount of the ranged cards down, who were sort of ballistas and axe throwers and sharpshooters and so on. These ones with the, if you place this card here,
the nine in front of it suddenly get blocked off with 5 damage each, because they were some of my really powerful cards.
Yeah, yeah. So you end up with 9 squares in which I can't place any orc without being killed, apart from the very highest command ones. And then all you have to do is tap it with a few extra infantry units who add a few arrows here and there into that 9 grid, and pretty much that becomes an absolute no placement zone. At which point, the best I could be hoping for was that I'd take someone with you when you killed me, when I placed it. And the point really is that all cards count towards the victory total. So if I take one with you, that's essentially a draw. We both gain a point towards winning. But you have a lot of cards down who I can't touch. So if I try and place cards that can attack them, they're just going to get wiped out straight away. Do no real damage and help me in no real fashion. But increment your winning tally.
Yeah, that first game was a bit brutal.
I don't know whether, I mean, obviously you're a strategic and tactical genius, of course, but I don't know whether that was something you just did you spot that straight away, that was the way to play these, or did that just seem to be the way they happened to
The moment
place?
I saw those ranged units, I knew that the game is basically about denial using those ranged units.
It's about territory control. It reminded me an awful lot of chess.
Yeah.
Except now we've got lots of wacky pieces with many different attributes instead of the standard, you know, knight, rook, bishop. They all do this, this, and this. Suddenly we got decks of cards which essentially become you've got the randomness of... See, chess doesn't have any randomness in it, in theory. You don't, you know, reach into a bag and pull out some pieces to put on the board. They're all there to start with. You know what they all do.
Write that idea down.
Well, this is that idea, I think. I don't know enough about each of the classes of these types of cards and what they all do. They all seem to have different types, though. I mean, it even says on their leaflet there, they come in different varieties. You've got infantry, cavalry, berserkers.
Yes, and the rules and for half of these units, aren't on infantry the main units. Rules.
Yeah.
So it says berserker, and then, you know...
What does berserker mean? Yeah. A little
it doesn't
skull
mention
symbol.
It again in the rules pamphlet.
Yeah. I suppose that there's a lot of advanced rules that are on their website that they didn't want to put people off initially with. I don't know. But I suppose each of those sorts of... each card has a class and a rank. The rank, I suppose, indicates its general power, and I suppose the class indicates the type of move. Maybe this piece resembles more a pawn than a rook, you know, that kind of thing. The cards don't actually move, except for being deployed and undeployed, but the way they attack is very reminiscent of zones of control and threatening pieces in chess. It's that kind of mentality, that kind of mindset as you're playing through. So I was playing as the Orcs in the first game, and I was really struggling to find any sort of coherent deck-based strategy. Well, the dwarf one, I could see as you were placing them, I instantly understood what the dwarf deck was supposed to be about and how to use it, and you'd hit straight on it. You'd create overlapping fields of fire. I couldn't get near any of your things to kill them.
Well, that's the thing. I got very lucky with placement at the start.
I think perhaps shuffling, maybe, yeah.
And you didn't push... when you needed to, either because you couldn't or you were...
There was many turns where the only legal move, because you have to place a card every turn, you can't choose not to place one, because that's how your opponent gains points. There were so many situations on that first game where I just couldn't put any card down without it being instantly destroyed and not having killed anything with it. All my cards were much weaker. They didn't have enough attack. See, I wouldn't have minded if it had been about whittling you down and sacrificing things. You know, throwing away berserker-type cards with low defence but high attack to break up your fortress a bit out of your overlapping zones of fire. But nothing I had could make a dent, and they were just being obliterated straight away. So, I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't think that it's quite as bleak as that first game.
We had a second game.
We had a second game. And
We swapped decks. Because we were trying to work out whether it was me being crap or the Orcs being crap.
Yeah. And I did a lot better.
But you still lost.
I still lost.
And by quite a margin, I think.
I think the Orcs are inherently...
You didn't lose as badly as I did, but as an Orc player, I think you just had trouble of a similar nature. Could you see, using your Orcs, what the idea was?
Yes.
Is it just charge and hope for the best? Because that's a very poor way to do it.
It's a lot more attacky, but you don't quite have the same attackiness that the dwarves have, even though they seem to be very defensive.
You could so turtle up with them. You just keep building big zones of death, you know.
The problem with
10 plus attack points on squares for three in every direction.
The problem with those dwarves is once you get the 5 attack axemen out...
Yeah.
You're doomed.
Yeah, and there's ballista and all the
rest
of it.
There's nothing you can do with the Orcs. The game is not fundamentally balanced. It's only slightly misbalanced, I think.
Mm.
But it's just enough to make it, so it's very hard to win.
I would love to see two sets of this and try dwarves versus dwarves.
Yes.
Which I suppose you could do, because you just make sure that when you place your own dwarves there, they face you.
Your stuff's always the right way up.
Yeah, yours is always the right way up to you, so you can see whose is what. But I'd like to see Orcs versus Orcs and Dwarves versus Dwarves, just to see as a kind of scientific balancing exercise. Because, to be honest, I think the initial way they've designed this is just... I don't know, I just can't get my head around the Orc strategy, what you're meant to do. See, traditionally, in an RTS or whatever, where you've got Orcs and Dwarves, the Dwarves get the really expensive but hard-to-kill units, and the Orcs get the really easy-to-kill but very cheap-to-produce units. Now, I don't know how you would represent that in a single take-turns-type card game. I mean, would it work better if the Orc player took 2 turns for every 1 turn of the Dwarves? Would that then represent the cheapness or facility of getting new units out? What would that do to the game? Because that's what you'd expect as an Orc player in an RTS, is to be able to just churn out hundreds of goblins and swarm the enemy.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite as hordish as that.
Well, no, it's not. It's not hordish at all, but I don't know what it is.
I think it is a case of you have to be on the assault. You have to have lots of people mingled amongst the enemy, and you have to stop them getting to the point where they can turtle in. You have to attack from turn one, which I did.
You were a lot more aggressive
You were turtling up from the start.
I was trying to get
disrupted that quite happily until you turtled up a couple of lines back.
Yeah, so you just start again halfway across the board.
And unfortunately, I was losing cards faster than I could win.
I think the aggressive start for an Orcs is a good idea, but it still costs you. Remember, every time you sacrifice a unit, that's still 1 point for your opponent closer to winning.
There's very little cards there which don't sacrifice the unit.
And you were relying very heavily on your command cards, which is risky, because if you lose four of those, you lose the game.
That's how I lost.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, took four of those out, but they were the only things with enough punch to get the job done.
Okay, so what do we like about this game?
I like the basic idea and the format. This is essentially a variant on chess. It's about spatial awareness. It's about positional play, about tactical territory.
The positional play is fantastic.
It's clever and simple as well. The basic rules and turn sequence, once we got the hang of it and got going with it very quickly indeed. You could get quite a few more games of that in, I think.
Yeah.
I just think the design of the specific decks is a problem.
Well,
I mean, we're looking at their website at the moment, and they're talking about.
Actually, I'm looking at the Kickstarter.
an Elves versus Lizardmen deck. Yeah. It says in the rules, coming soon, Elves versus Lizardmen,
which seems to be out, and they've just kickstarted a Templars versus Undead. So maybe the later ones do fix the balance, and if the balance is fixed, I think it has the potential of being an incredibly good, fun game.
Yeah, I think the basic premise and the basic idea of as well. We like the format of it all. I think a better quality.
The playmat is really, really flimsy paper.
But cards are all right. The art style on the cards, quick, cheap and cheerful, quick and dirty, as it were. I mean,
yeah, you don't get.
I've seen a lot more lavish collectible cards. The art.
I've seen a lot better drawn ones. It works as a style. It's coherent as a style.
And it's one of those sort of quick, I don't know, it says 30 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes, but I think we got through a bit quicker than that, didn't we?
I think we're doing about half an hour.
I suppose so.
Yeah, I like it. I do think that it has potential. I just think maybe this set isn't as good, and I'm tempted to pick up the next set to see if...
Well, this has put me off picking up any of my own. That's what this has done for me. It's made me think that it needs a lot more playtesting. I'd love to see Dwarves versus Dwarves. Does that work? Is that better? Or Orcs versus Orcs.
Or a couple more games to see if I can learn how to use the Orcs properly.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we can hit the forums and see if anyone else has figured it out, but I'm just thinking that if we were to go to the forums and have a look, we'd just see a lot of people complaining that Orcs is over, that Dwarves are OP or something, and that Orcs are broken or whatever. It just didn't really click for me how best to use them. It just attack, and hope for the best. In which case, the whole game becomes about a race between... Can the dwarf fort up in time, or can he be disrupted? And disrupting the dwarf from forting up seems to cost you quite a lot of units anyway.
Yes.
That was the sort of downside of it. I don't know. I don't know how you'd fix that, what you'd do. Because in terms of unit construction and cheapness of units and point scores and that sort of thing, I don't see how that could be applied to this kind of game. You wouldn't want a deck full, three or four times as big as the dwarf deck, because your chances of having something useful come out are actually get worse when you add more cards to a deck like this. So,
well, yeah.
I don't know.
The customizable bit wouldn't work at all.
No.
It does.
They suggest it as some advanced rules that you can sort of use points to build your own deck.
As long as you keep the different classes of stuff balanced, but I just don't think that's going to work at all. Mainly because you could just replace all of your rear-facing people with forward-facing high-value ones.
But it is quite clever and quite intricate in the same way that it's quite satisfying to be able to make a bold, aggressive move with a chess piece across a board of enemy pieces and land them in a space where they're not threatened and where they're threatening an enemy, or can take a piece, pluck a piece out of what looks like a really badly really highly defensive, bad position on the enemy line in chess. So if you like that kind of thing, this is those sorts of skills.
Yeah.
That kind of game.
I'm not actually seeing a lot of people complain, just having a quick look, that the game seems
seeing a lot of people posting, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's not a majorly popular game, although it has been covered by all of the major board game YouTube channels recently, because it's quite new. Yeah, it's weird. The mechanics are fantastic. I love the idea of it, and I love the form factor and everything, and I could gladly see it sticking in a bag and always having it in case I wanted to play a game.
Yeah, sort of thing you'd play on a train or something like that.
But as it stands, the Orcs versus Dwarves just isn't as fun as it could be.
I'd like to see, some more of a symmetrical pair of decks, because I think the basic problem here is that they've tried to produce lots of different decks, because obviously that's how you sell your expansions. Yeah, now we're going to do Lizardmen, now we're going to do Undead. And that's fine, but then you're now compelled to try and make each deck differently in some fashion, and try and make them, and at the same time, make them satisfying to play against each other. And that is a hellish exercise of balance, which I don't think they've got right.
I think that they are missing something, and hopefully the other sets do actually fix it. And even if only one of the armies in the next set fixes and works, then you've at least got them against the dwarves, or you can play the orcs against the other one.
Yeah.
So I think I will actually pick up
more
the
play
next pack.
I suppose more play, see if you can figure it out. But I just think, because this is something we were saying as we were playing through, is that when, if you're designing a board game, your biggest challenge is to design it in such a fashion that whoever wins the first ever game that two people play together doesn't do so in such a hugely crushing manner that their opponent never wants to play it again. That's the trick. So you need to make two brand new players playing it come in very similarly in terms, you know, one person needs to win just over the other rather than one person needs to thrash the other for the first three games of you ever play of this thing.
Yeah, and
so initial balance, I think if this was their first one that they're ever sort of doing and they're going to go on to expansions, I'd have done something like good humans versus bad humans and have essentially functionally mirrored decks.
Yeah, that
with just different card art and backstory. That way you can, you know, just play black versus white, as it were, without having to sort of suddenly understand that, you know, in fantasy literature, the dwarves are the ones that fortify best and the orcs, the ones that are best at dying, I think. That is typically the orcs' place in most RPGs, is to die easily and in numbers to the hero to make him look good. And in that regard, the deck's designed very well.
Yes. having had a quick look at Board Game Geek, it's not got a terrible score.
Okay. So what's the popular reception? How long has it been out? Is it very new?
That's actually a good question.
I've gazumped him on his surfing there. Click faster, man. There's some statistics and things.
It's got 7.22 out of 10, which, you know, average.
How many voters on that?
71.
So not hugely played.
No. Came out in 2012.
Quite new.
Yeah, does take about half an hour to play, like they suggest.
Mm-hmm.
And it did win an award. I can see why it won the award.
It's a very clever idea. I just think it hasn't been implemented as well as it could be.
Yeah,
I'd have gone with two identical starter decks: black versus white, whatever. Good people versus evil people. Red versus blue, whatever, but just have a functionally mirrored set of decks to begin with, and then yes, you can move on to the quirky expansion decks with weird strategies involved.
So, do we recommend this game?
I don't know. I'm thinking no, to be honest. I think there's a lot of other games out there, and then that probably need looking at, and I think this needs more refinement. I think.
Yeah,
I think it's just let down by the quirky racial characteristics.
I
think the idea is very clever, though.
I want to recommend it, but I'm not entirely sure that it's balanced enough to be enjoyable in the first couple of games.
I think I could get pretty pissed off if we kept playing that, to be honest, yeah.
Well,
because I wasn't, because it got to the point, towards the end of the second game, I was winning, and I was thinking, it's not me winning, is it? This is the dwarves winning. This is the design of that deck makes it very difficult for even me to get wrong.
Yeah.
But you did better as orcs than I did.
But still,
so
lost,
you probably should have won
just,
if they were
you
equal.
You just had too much high damage. Yeah. Units that you could drop in and kill nearly anything I had in one turn.
Quite imbalanced sides, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing in a two-player competitive game.
So we almost recommend it.
We almost recommend it. I think it's a clever idea, and perhaps the future expansions or second editions or whatever might address some of this. I'd have to keep an eye on other people's reviews to see what these Templars versus Undeads and things are.
Yeah.
See if that's any better.
Yeah, because, of course, the later release expansions are going to have learned a lot of lessons.
Yeah, that's what you'd have to hope.
Yeah.
Rules, revisions and so on.
So, in general, the conclusion is the game's a brilliant idea, but the initial set is not quite as good as it could be.
Close, but no cigar.
So, shall we move on to the next game?
Let's go do the next game.
We've got to go play it now.
Got to go play it now. Back in a minute.
We're back.
Yep. Back again.
We played Star Trek Attack Wing.
Yes, Star Trek Attack Wing. This is by...
The people who make HeroClix.
Okay. Do you know who that is? It doesn't even matter. Yeah, it's not the same people that make the X-Wing game.
No, they licensed the rules. The rules are very similar.
Yeah.
Uses very similar stuff. but it's not quite X-Wing.
Yeah, okay. So I think we might... Did we talk about X-Wing on a previous show?
Yeah, we talked about X-Wing previously, yeah. Yeah. We played some games where we played incredibly badly. It turned into a furball and we both got upset.
Yeah, not a huge fan, I have to be said. Okay, so the basic rules then and setup. You have a pair of... Well, the stuff that came in the box, you get one spaceship each of Federation, Klingon and Romulan?
Yes.
Okay, so...
And unlike... Star Wars, you can play this three-player.
Yeah, I think the three sides mixes things up a bit, obviously, because then you can pick any two of those versus each other, and it's not always just, you know, same old TIE fighters versus same old X-Wings. You only get one capital ship of each, though. You get an Enterprise Dederadex Romulan thing and a something or other Vorcha Klingon thing. You get all the cards that represent various famous captains from the show.
And the ones from the other races.
And a bunch of tokens and rulers and measuring devices and stuff.
Yeah,
you don't get the playmat with it. That thing was separate.
No,
was it?
Yes, I was using a separate playmat, which was a Dyson sphere.
Totally not a Death Star.
It
at
wasn't
all.
A Death Star at all.
No, right, good, excellent.
It's played on a 3-foot by 3-foot board.
Yep, you can play it on anything really. I think that's one thing that sort of made me a bit. It turns me off a bit. There's no board. There's no actual spaces and counters, and you must move it here and here and here. It's all very freeform, and that's
because it is more of a war game.
That upsets me a bit. It's basically the same sort of thing as tabletop miniatures, and measuring it all out with rulers and stuff.
Only you've got pre-painted models.
Yep, quite poor quality pre-painted models.
They are the Heraclix pre-painted horrible quality models. And I have a plan for replacing them with better models.
Fair enough. Find the ones of the right scale. So you pick your ship, you get your cards and your equipment and stuff. There's a sort of point buying scheme to allow you to use different qualities of equipment and captains and so on. We went with the standard set it suggested in the rules. I had someone I don't recognise with their classic bowl cut haircut Romulan thing going on there. And who's in charge of your ship?
One of the random Klingons.
Okay, fair enough. So no one we knew.
No. Klingon from one particular episode. You had Romulan from one particular episode.
I love it. Let the extras have their day.
We decided not to use the Enterprise.
Yeah, because it's just so overpowered, or something.
No.
They all handle differently, these spaceships. Mine was a bit different to yours, yeah.
Okay, yes, so yours was incredibly unmanoeuvrable, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So you set these spaceships up within 4 inches of the each edge of the table. Then turn sequence goes like this. You have a little turny dial wheel thing, which has a slot in it, and you turn the wheel until you show one of the available manoeuvres your spaceship can do. These wheels are customised for each specific spaceship. Each wheel has a different set of arrows on it. So you can have an ahead 3, a left 2, backwards 1, that kind of thing. So you have to look at the table and anticipate what your opponent's going to do and anticipate what you want to do, which is often quite tricky in my case. Choose your manoeuvre that you're going to do, and then you turn that on the wheel, put that face down so no one can see it, and then your opponent does the same. At that point, you then, in order of spaceship initiative or something, turn the wheels
over. The
initiative
skill of your captain.
Yep.
It's different from Star Wars again, because in that, it's the ship itself who has the initiative.
They move the initiative onto the captain.
Yeah, because the captain is part of the ship. The ship and the captain are the same.
Yeah.
But in this, you could say put Picard on a Klingon ship.
Yeah.
And use it would Picard's still be Picard's initiative right, but it would be on a different ship.
Interesting. So it's like a difference from the Star Wars one then. So then you turn your wheels over, and then in order of initiative, you use the various different measuring sticks to actually move the ship in accordance with what you've said you're going to do on your wheel.
Yeah.
Now, in the Star Wars game, that typically results in me just piling all my X-Wings into his massive TIE fighter collision, furball, implosion, death.
Which is how you're not meant to play.
Yes, I don't know how to not play like that. This is much better, much easier. You've only got two ships on the table, and it was quite difficult to hit each other with
them. We could have had more ships.
Oh, I think that might ruin it, to be honest. Okay, so you move your ship, then at the end of that movement, you then can do an action. Now, some of the movements have red arrows on, meaning that they're quite stressy and difficult, and that will push your ship onto auxiliary power, and if that's a status effect which stops them having an action, and you can repair that auxiliary power thing by choosing a manoeuvre with a green arrow, which is a nice low-stress manoeuvre that gives people time to repair shit.
A slight saunter to the left.
Yes, exactly. Drift forward a little bit. So then you have your action. There's a variety of different actions. The actions available to you depend on which sort of ship you've got. Yeah. I had a cloak on mine.
Yeah, I did. Exciting. So I didn't use my cloak.
I use my cloak a lot. You can target lock, which is basically setting you up for using torpedoes and things later on. There's a go to evasive sort of manoeuvres type token as well, which improves your defence in the ensuing combat. Various different options like that. And then you, at the end of that, your opponent does the same thing, and then you look at the table and you see if anyone can shoot anyone.
Yep, and then shooting is in the other order, whereas manoeuvres are the lowest to high, shooting is highest to low.
Mm-hmm. So then you look on your card for the number of your red value, which is the number of attack dice you can use. There's various modifiers to that. If you're near, you get a bonus. If you're too far away, they get a bonus to defence. Various people and equipment can modify those number of dice to be rolled or give you abilities like being able to change, upgrade results on dice, that sort of thing, or re-roll certain dice. You roll your red dice. It's all octahedrons, isn't it?
Yep.
You roll those. If it comes up with stars or critical hit symbols, big explosions, small explosions, then your opponent then has to try and do something about those. They get to roll the green dice, which is the number of which is based on what's on their card.
In my case, one.
You had a very not defendy ship at all. I think that's the Klingon way.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not attacking, you're not a Klingon. So you then use your green dice to try and cancel out some of the red dice results, and you end up with some red dice results left over, and those cause damage to ships, which take down shields and then eat into the hull and sometimes cause critical effects.
And in the end, it leads to explosions.
Mm, yes, you have a number of shield points on your ship, and when those are gone, you start eating into the hull points, and when those are gone, your ship is dead and game over. Yeah. Well, if all your ships die. We only had one ship each.
Yes.
And so combat's over, you start again with your manoeuvring, with your big turny wheel thing. The basic rules flow there, not too bad. I think we had a bit of umming and ahhing about specific outcomes of dice in particular situations,
yeah,
but the overall flow of it seemed fairly intuitive.
In fact, it's slightly better than Star Wars because the manual's slightly better written.
I love that manual, yes.
Yeah.
Big, thick, glossy card. You know, I'm a very, very keen proponent of high production quality graphic design.
Yeah, it covered a lot more of the situations than the Star Wars
one. We had so much trouble with just, you know, being led down dead ends with the rules in the Star Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars one doesn't do stuff like specify whether or not your shields take off critical hits or normal hits first.
Yeah, we were left guessing for a lot of this, and presumably there's a lot of website fact searching for the Star Wars game. I don't know if a later edition or a more recent edition might have more comprehensive rules.
I don't think there is a more recent edition yet.
The rule book for this one, if anything, too comprehensive. We're finding ourselves bogged down in some quite specific clauses and examples, and not a lot was left unexplained, which I suppose is good, but I think perhaps they could have reorganised it a bit better, put more in the appendix. But on the whole, very good rules. I like that. And that's a huge improvement on is it Fantasy Flight do the Star Wars one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's much better.
Yeah. The big difference, I think, between the two, they play very similar, but it's a bit weird in the way that the ships feel bigger in Star Trek.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's exactly the same rules for manoeuvring, although the ships are a bit more lumbering.
I don't know. I was looking at there's a different manoeuvre arrows available. They weren't too dissimilar to TIE fighters and X-Wings based on... Obviously, the whole thing's not on any numbers.
It feels very different. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
The other big difference is the equipment seems a bit better on and the upgrades on Star Trek, because you also got officers and things. You build a bridge crew as well, and they give you abilities.
They open up your action availabilities.
My guy, very usefully, I could use an action to repair shields.
I had a weird action on the sort of lieutenant it gave me, which was that you could sacrifice him to take out a member of the opponent's ship's crew if there were no shields.
And that would be really useful to take out my guy who was repairing shields.
Presumably he beams over on some sort of suicide mission, and then that's that. And hopefully you do that in such a fashion that it means that you end up on top at the end of you both losing an officer.
Yeah, well, you would have stopped me. I did manage to regenerate my shields throughout the game.
Mm.
It didn't quite help in the end.
The Romulan ship can do something called a sensor shadow. That was
anything that's cloaked.
Which basically allows you to move your ship up to 2 inches to the side of where it is because it's actually somewhere else because you were faking sensors and things. And that got me out of some tricky scrapes quite a bit.
You were moving out of my attack. I stayed visible on full attack to start with, and you were just nicking out of my attack arc all the time.
Mm, yeah, I was playing quite defensively, and then I realised, hang on, I can shoot him, and so I've managed to turn around towards the end and charge back at him, and got lucky with a few rolls. Mostly, though, it's very much like... I mean, I don't know if this... It seemed better. I mean, I'll say right now, I don't really like the Star Wars one. And I don't know why. This one seemed better. And again, but I think part of the problem is that the primary way to be good at this game and the primary way of exercising your skill is in guessing what your opponent is going to do next. It's this whole business with the hidden command wheels that you put your manoeuvre in, you leave it face down. And you have to look at how the battle looks now, and then you have to think about, well, what options does he have and how can I counter that and which one's he going to go for? And very much of the time I found myself doing better or worse purely by luckily guessing if your ship was going to turn left or right in the next turn.
If we had more ships on the table,
I'm not sure I'd have enjoyed it then. It gets really complicated and it gets quite furball. And I always, particularly with the very high number of models we were playing with in the TIE Fighters versus X-Wings and the Star Wars one, I was just colliding everywhere and lucky if I was managing to line up a shot and then getting in my own way a lot of the time.
Yeah, but that's because you
trying to fly them as a squadron, yeah. And you should just split them up probably.
But you also don't like getting red maneuvers. So when you should have gone forwards and done a flip, you wouldn't do that when we were playing X-Wing.
Yeah.
You should have done that quite a lot, and you would have got firing solutions.
But it seems, yeah, but you're trading away your ability to do actions, and a lot of the actions seemed quite useful. So
yeah, but
you're
not
losing flexibility by just constantly hammering the red
maneuvers.
Yeah, but
you would have got shots. I mean, I did it to you in this game, because I could do it. You couldn't, could you? Your ship couldn't do it.
You had your red maneuver was go forward two and then flip.
Three, I think it was, and flip.
And mine was reverse two, yeah, and keep the same facing, which actually worked quite well for me a few times.
Yeah.
Managed to back up and still keep you in firing arc. But certainly there's the spatial awareness there, and that's obviously very important, trying to not crash into your own ships and trying to make sure you're pointing at them and they're not pointing at you. But it's this whole guesswork. Part of it's about psychology, part of it's about understanding your opponent enough to know what they're likely to do. Some courses of action are obvious, and sometimes there's if a ship's very near the edge of the map, they've got to turn it back into the battle.
There's also, if you back up a bit, so in range three, but it guarantees that your arc, that they're not going to get out of it. That's what
But if you then go forward four, you're seven away, and I've wasted my manoeuvre and gained a token, you know? So I don't know if you're going to try and get out of the way, or if you're going to try and turn, or if you're going to
flip. That's the same with any...
I know,
I'm
just not very good with people, and I think I'm taking it out on this game. But more than many other games that we've played, I think this one, I find myself quite frustrated and paralysed by my inability to be able to accurately guess what the opponent's going to do. Because you so need to be in the right position at the end of it all. By the time everyone's wheels are all flipped and everyone's worked out where they're all gone, if you're halfway across, if you're in front of the enemy pointing away from them, then you're going to take a massive battery.
In that case, wouldn't you rather build up a fleet of ships which had 360 firing arcs?
That'd be nice. Are there some?
Yeah.
I remember the few times I did reasonably well in the Star Wars one was with the ion cannon turret on the
Wyoming. I hated that gun.
Because you just got to be within range. It's got a 360 arc. You don't have to worry about facings. That becomes a non-issue. So that's part of the problem solved. Just need one with an infinite range, and also the manoeuvre wheel. I'd like a zero forward manoeuvre and a flip on the spot type thing. That would be useful.
Yeah, I don't think
any of them do that. No,
that wouldn't be very balanced. But yeah, there's stuff like, I think the Enterprise D has a 360 firing arc. And some other stuff. So maybe you're better off with the Federation.
I don't know. I think it's deeper than individual ships. It's a psychological problem or block I have with the whole concept. I don't like the Star Wars one much. And this one, to be fair, it was better. But I wonder how much of that was just we were playing with one ship each and it was much easier to try and keep a handle on.
I think we should try with a slightly larger fleet. But in this, you only ever get up to two or three ships tops.
I have to say, I think the whole rules format, it's weird. It psychologically seems like it fits very large lumbering capital ships much better than dogfighting sort of space fighters, which is how it tends to pan out in the Star Wars one. I hadn't played with the Millennium Falcon or the Corvette or anything, only those sort of very large ships yet. But I mean, I'm willing to give that a go. But on the whole, I'm thinking the whole format just seems to lend itself to very large ships trading blows over long distances rather than, you know, lots of swarms of little fighters in and out. That kind of micro...
I think
doesn't seem to fit.
I think what that is the Star Trek game is probably slightly easier to play with more models than the Star Wars one.
I suppose,
especially when you've got a TIE fighter and you want to fly that TIE fighter really fast.
Yeah, it's time consuming as well. It took us what, an hour?
Yeah, it took us about an hour, but there was
and we only had one ship each.
Yeah, but that will come down quite dramatically,
I suppose, once you get the flow of the rules. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Lords of War thing we were doing earlier, the turn flow there was much, much quicker. But this thing is, there's still a lot you have to remember. There's still a lot of weird tokens with obscure meanings. There's a lot of actions that you have to try and go back and dive back into the rules to keep reading about how to work. And you know, right up to the end of the match, we were going, oh yeah, you can do this, this, and this, and this, and this does that. Things like the torpedo card expending itself. You know, you have to reload them as an action. You can't just keep firing away. That sort of didn't become apparent until quite near the end. So even though the rules are much better with this edition, I mean, the rules are better, the models are worse.
The models the aren't very hot.
The overall experience is better, I think.
I think you can overlook the models. A lot of people repaint them, and you can
just use bits of paper.
Yeah. Actually, if you go to that shelf there, where you've got the Star Wars...
They're a bit big, I think.
No, to the right. The shelf on the right.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see an Enterprise. Grab that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, blimey. Hang on. Just get that.
Which is, this is really good radio. Now, do you recognise that?
Oh, that's the original series one,
yes,
is it?
Yes, but that's a Micro Machines one.
Oh, and wow. That's about the right sort of size. Yeah, that'll probably go on the stick.
They don't make them anymore.
No.
But if you, I can replace them with
those. I used to collect these, the Star Wars Micro Machines.
Yeah, you can replace them with the Micro Machines ones. In fact,
that is about, if not as good as, better quality.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I've got that is the Constitution Class Enterprise in Attack Wing is tiny because it's to scale with the Enterprise D.
Oh, they're trying to keep it all to scale with
No, just for the Enterprises. It's really annoying.
I was about to say, so crystalline entity is going to be hard work.
A lot of people use that Micro Machines model instead.
Okay.
And replace it on the thing. So, yeah, there are other sources of models. There was this Japanese range as well. You were playing with the Enterprise E earlier, which is a bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. I suppose that would go on a stick. That looks a lot better.
Yeah. Or you can go as far as these ones, which are die-cast ones, which are a bit bigger.
I suppose in theory, all you've got to do then is scale your measuring sticks up accordingly.
Yeah.
And you just need a bit of a bigger table. And
using these, giving them nice stands and scaling up, I think this would look an awful lot nicer.
Yeah.
But I don't think it matters as much because the rules are the main thing.
Yeah, and the rules conveniently don't have any kind of units on the measurement. It's just 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and
you could do it on inches, you could do it on centimetres.
All you have to do is scale up your measuring stick.
Could do a live one-to-one scale thing with, like, parsecs or something.
I'm not sure the ruler would be very wieldy.
That'd be fine.
But, yeah, you expand the game by buying packs, which has a ship, bunch of cards, and all the tokens needed for that ship.
Mm-hmm. The Star Wars one was quite expensive, as I recall, what you get.
It's not really. It's about a tenner for a ship. Mm. But compared to anything else, you aren't buying hundreds of ships. You're just buying a couple.
Yeah, I suppose the upside is you don't need a vast army of these things. In fact, that would make the game considerably worse.
And unlike the Star Wars one, when you buy an expansion, a lot more of it is usable on other ships. Because whereas in the Star Wars one, you just get, say, proton torpedoes, an R2 unit or whatever, which you could then use on other stuff. In this, you get the captains, and all the captains can be used somewhere else.
So it's a bit more modular and interchangeable, which seems like a definite improvement. Yeah.
So, yeah, you might not want to run the Constitution Class Enterprise, but you might want to run Kirk on, say, the Enterprise D, which is a lot more interesting. Also, the fact that you can pay a bit more points, only a couple more points, and put captains on different races' ships. So you can make a fleet out of a Romulan ship, a Klingon ship, and a Ferengi ship, and that is completely legal.
Yeah, so you're not necessarily bound to particular racial ties.
So if any one ship turns out to be too powerful, anyone can use it.
Mm, that's a good self-regulating mechanism, yeah.
So I think there's a lot of potential there, but I just feel that the fact that it's from a less respected company and you know the models aren't as good, it's just not going to get as much, or isn't getting as much good recognition as the Star Wars one, despite almost being exactly the same game.
Also, I think a large part of it is just the franchise identity, isn't it? Do more people like Star Wars than Star Trek, or vice versa?
That's a good question.
You'd go for the one with the ships from the film that you like the best, or whatever series.
Yeah.
Hmm.
When it comes to longevity,
yeah,
the fact that they keep releasing ships, and this one's a bit problematic because they're releasing new packs of ships, new waves of them every couple of months, so they're coming out really fast. Because they're releasing the HeroClix models with the card rules for this game, they've already got dozens of models ready to go.
Okay.
So they can release really quickly. Whereas the Star Wars one has come to a slight problem where they're now selling stuff like repaints for TIE Interceptors because they've run out of ships already.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, there's not that many ships in Star Wars.
You start going expanded universe, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, but that's hard now, because what's legit expanded universe? They're just about to cut off half of it.
Oh, dear.
Which is good.
I should check out the Old Republic. There's loads of new designs of spaceships in there. They're quite cool.
But they're old.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, and also...
Depends what's canon, yeah.
Old Republic may be about to be expunged from the canon, for all we know. Because they've drafted a committee.
Oh, God.
A truth committee go through all of the old stuff and decide what's real and what isn't.
This is all a bit McCarthyish.
Yeah. So all those horrible, horrible books are going to no longer be valid, and you could hear the people crying.
Could you play a fleet of Enterprises against a fleet of TIE Fighters?
You could, but...
Or some crossover continuity.
The game wouldn't work very balanced.
You reckon?
No, because it's not actually compatible.
Okay. That seems odd. Seems to use most of the same rules and bits.
The thing is, one TIE fighter against, say, the Enterprise-D.
Yes.
The TIE fighter's never going to get through the shields, and the Enterprise's targeting will be able to kill it very easily with one shot.
Okay, fair enough.
Small snub fighters, large capital ships.
I prefer the large capital ships.
I think I do as well. You're not a particularly large... Star Trek fan, are you?
Not really. I've done my time in Star Trek Online, and if anything, that's made me less of a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, that would do it. But you recognised all the ships?
Yeah. I didn't know what the names were, but I've seen them about. The Dideridex had, in Star Trek Online, generally regarded as an unmanoeuvrable, tanky type of ship. Most Romulan players prefer the Warbirds.
Yes.
So there. Yeah. But yes, yeah, I know my way around a bit of Star Trek, and I know my way around a bit of Star Wars. I wouldn't call myself a huge fan of either, to be honest, but... And I wouldn't necessarily be bothered about picking one over the other.
Well, no, because that way leads to madness.
It is nice to see these familiar ships and, you know, in a game context. It's good fun.
Yeah, I think it does work very well as a game. And turning space combat into a very, very playable and easy-to-pick-up game.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that is quite age-friendly. You could play it... with your kids quite happily, or you can play it as an adult who just so happens to like Star Trek quite nicely.
What's the recommended ages on the boxes and stuff? Do we got those?
I have the box next to me because I left it downstairs, but it's going to be relatively small pieces.
12 plus, probably, yeah. 12 plus, 8 plus, something like that.
It'll be 12 probably. But
three players is interesting.
Yeah, three players or more. There's more than three factions. And, of course...
Oh, are we going to see them adding extra whole factions, like Borg cubes and stuff?
Yeah, Borg are coming. You've already got Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Romulans, Klingons, Federation, and Dominion. There's a Ferengi ship, which was a special thing, but there's going to be more coming.
Yeah.
And, of course, you don't need the entire faction. You can just start adding stuff in.
Yeah. Interesting.
The Dominion stuff, it's the Cardassians and the Breen as well. So there's quite a lot of expansion potential there. In fact, one of the things they've released as one of the rewards for competing in some organised play is a fighter squadron.
Oh, right.
It's a Dominion fighter squadron, Cardassian ships. And that's quite interesting because they managed to put wing of fighters in.
Yeah.
And all that happens with that is each time you shoot it, it gets less powerful. So they have managed to put fighters into the game.
Interesting.
In a very interesting way, and I'd love to see that in action.
Mm. It does seem like there's more scope and mileage and breadth for sort of more diversity within the Star Trek side of it than the Star Wars stuff, which going by what you said earlier, it sounds like they're already having trouble coming up with new ideas.
The potential is there, and there's a lot more potential. Mm. I sort of wish it was a slightly nicer, better company doing it. I wish it was Fantasy Flight or someone, because the miniatures would be better.
Hmm.
And when you're showing the game,
I tell you what, though, the miniatures that come with this thing seem a lot more robust than the miniatures for the Star Wars game.
Yeah, they are.
They could take a bit more manhandling than the delicate parts on the Star
Wars.
They're
a lot thicker plastic.
Yeah, but you lose detail and definition, and they've had a frankly very sloppy paint job on them.
Yeah, but then again, the paint job on the Star Wars ones aren't that much better. It's just they got an ink wash on, which hides a multitude of sins, and it's very easy to do. So, and you just can't do that on the pristine look on a Star Trek ship. So, is there anything else we can say about it before we come to a conclusion?
I don't know. Simple, straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A playable out of the starter. I mean, we already used the starter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Although I do have extra ships, so scaling it up to a larger game isn't too hard.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest
problem, I think, it benefits from its simplicity. Just the two or three ships if you're playing three player. Seems a bit more manageable.
I don't think you'd ever want to go past three ships, really. Mm. Whereas the temptation in Star Wars is to just keep piling many cheap TIE fighters.
Keep piling on TIE fighters, yeah.
Although there are tactics to deal with that now.
Well, you shouldn't have to be doing that in the first place. That's the thing.
Yeah. The biggest problem is, of course, the Enterprise, the Deirdrecks, and the Vorcha are all only in the starter set, so you'd have to buy another starter set to get another one.
Okay.
Although, like in Star Wars, there is a certain logic to getting two starter sets, so you both have a copy of all the templates, and you actually have enough dice.
Yeah, not enough dice again. Same as with Star Wars.
Yeah, it's very easy to just push past that five or whatever it is they give you and need more.
Hmm.
So, would you recommend this game?
Yeah, this is an odd one for me. I would recommend it, and I think it's a good game. I don't like it, but that's for personal reasons, and I just have trouble with it. I had trouble with the psychology involved, with guessing, and the sort of... I found myself a little bit agoraphobic with the freeformness of the tabletop, as it were, and the templates. But I think it's a well-put-together game. I think the rules are solid. It's a good high-quality package of bits and pieces you get with it, and... durable. I would recommend it.
Yeah, I would too.
I just don't like playing it myself that much. It's much better than Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's different from Star Wars. I still like Star Wars. I would suggest people played both if they could, but I think this is the more accessible game and maybe a slightly better designed game.
It's more comprehensive. The rules are more deliberate, more comprehensive, yeah.
Yeah, and it's fun. I like it. It really does capture that feeling of large lumbering spaceships blowing bits out of each other. And, you know, we had two warships effectively running around because we didn't have a Federation ship.
Yeah.
It felt right cannon-wise. And, there was a lot of explosions, and until you blew me up because you cheated and shot me more than I shot you.
I had a lot of trouble with turning and things, but I got it. Got there in the end.
Yeah, in the end, you ran me ragged and were manoeuvring perfectly. And when you got to the point where I was facing the wrong way from you, in the arc, there was no way for me to get out of your arc in that one turn. I couldn't zoom out fast enough to get to range 3. And that's when I lost, because you just got a couple of rounds of shooting on me.
Yeah. So, yeah. Some of the benefits from practice, I think, as well.
I really recommend it as a fun game.
Excellent. So, with that, what did you learn this week?
I learned this week that 21-year-olds are getting incredibly young nowadays. God, that was depressing. We had a 21-year-old in the office, and God, I felt old.
Oh, blimey. And I didn't really learn anything this week.
Really?
No. Not at all. I looked, there was nothing.
You should subscribe yourself to one of those Facts of the Day sites.
I learned that tax needn't be taxing. It's that time of year again. Apart from that, nope.
Okay.
So do your spill.
Right, you can catch us on howtomurdertime.com, where you can catch all our episodes and also our previous seasons.
Previous seasons, that makes us sound quite veteran, really, doesn't it?
We're getting quite close to the 300th episode.
Oh, no, do you have to think of a special thing to do?
God, no, I'm going to forget which one.
I think we should
just get drunk. No one can quite agree on the count how many we've done.
We should just get really, really drunk and try and do 300th show.
How would that be different than any other episode?
300. Yeah, and also get all our Mumble friends in as well and just record that for an hour.
With them all drunk as well.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The Van Hemlock drinking party.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Okay.
If you go along to harrymetalfan.com, you can also leave us comments on the show. Tell us if you played either of these games, give us your experiences with them and what you think. Or if you have games you think we should play, recommend some. Because we're going to be doing a lot more of these shows now.
I'd love to hear from you.
Yes. You can also head along to iTunes and leave us a review. You can also go along to thepodcast.net.com, and you can catch up with shows like Critscast, which is the Team Fortress podcast where they manage to talk about stuff, and they're probably getting quite excited about Valve stuff at the moment.
Is it hats?
I don't think they announced any hats, but Valve had a developer week, and they always have lots of information that's interesting, so they're probably talking about that. If they're not, don't blame me.
You should check out John's other gigs as well, because he's like just a big multimedia celebrity.
Yes, you're going to move on.
He has at least two other podcasts.
Yes, moving on. Last week was that Ants?
I don't know. Okay. You were there.
I lose track. This week's is going to be Casablanca.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we like to cover the classics.
Yeah, I thought Casablanca wasn't in the 80s.
No, we're trying desperately to have films which aren't in the 80s.
Okay.
Or you can also catch me on the Thursday edition of The Brainstorm, which is like the...
What's that all about?
It's like the Sunday edition, but with less Matt.
Right.
Which, yeah, is a win-win all round.
There we go, won an episode.
He called me a sociopath. yes, that's just basically me and Brecky talking about the news and what's going on and basically getting upset with the NSA.
Oh, dear.
Which, you know, everyone should be. And do you have another gig?
I don't have another gig.
Oh, you should get another gig.
I throw everything I am into this one here podcast. It would seem derelict to do anything less.
Yeah, I'm getting to the stage where I'm recording three a week now and my voice is never going to recover.
You need to take some sort of talking sabbatical or something. Anyway, with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.